other people choose. Then we say SIJ is a dominant strategy. Because strategy SIJ will never lose to any other strategy SIF. Right? Okay? So, given other people's input, no matter what input they are, right? I don't care. No matter what they are, player I choose strategy SIJ is always good compared to other strategies. Right? So this is so-called dominant strategy. Alright? And then furthermore, if the inequality is strict, and then we say it is strictly dominant strategy. Alright? Strict means what? No equal sign, right? It's just larger than. Alright? If SIJ always gets more benefit compared to SIL, then it's strictly dominant strategy. Right? Okay. So now let's define the Pareto dominance and the Pareto optimality. So this one, I believe that earlier we mentioned it a bit, and then I believe many of you also know what it means by Pareto dominance. So basically it means, so I remember last time or the week before, I mentioned some kind of you have some marks for your different subjects, and then what's the Pareto dominance? It means that you, if you are not dominated by others, that means what? It means that if other people, they have higher marks in some subjects compared to you, then they must have a lower mark in one subject compared with you. Okay? They cannot have four higher marks than you, then they dominate you, right? Okay? So here, we'll define three levels of Pareto dominance. Okay? So what's the first level? Now, before we talk about Pareto dominance, we first let S and T be two strategy profiles from S. Okay, so S and T are two strategy profiles. Now, we say S weakly Pareto dominates T if GIS is larger than or equal to GIT. Okay? So this is for the Pareto dominate relationship for a single player I, right? Okay, for a single player I, if GIS larger than or equal to GIT, then we say S weakly Pareto dominates T. Now, but this weakly Pareto dominance, we know that it has to be applied in multiple dimensions. So this relationship should be correct for all the I. Okay, for all the I, which means for all the players. Alright? For all the players, certain profile is better than the other profile. Then we say, oh, this certain profile Pareto dominates this second one. Right? Okay? So if this relationship is correct or is true for every player I, then we say it's weakly Pareto dominates. Okay. Now, we of course can make it a bit stronger, right? We can say, oh, maybe this larger than or equal to becomes larger than, no equal. So the next level definition says, if for one player, this relationship, okay, is strict, if for one player, all right? So if there is one player J, that the inequality holds, alright? So there's one person who strictly likes this strategy's profile than that strategy profile. Then we say it is the Pareto dominates. Okay, so remember, just now, this one is called weakly Pareto dominates, right? So weakly means, it could be the case that everything is the same, right? Everything is equal, then it's weakly Pareto dominates. But if one of them is strictly better, then it's Pareto dominates. Now the next level says, if all of them are strictly better, then it's strongly the Pareto dominates. Okay, so there is a strongly Pareto dominates relationship where the inequality, the larger than, is applied to all the players. Alright? So you see, larger than or equal to everything is weakly. One of them strict, it's normal, right? And then everything strict is what? Strong, right? Now, that's easy. Just three levels of definition. Now, based on these three definitions, we are going to define the so-called Pareto optimal. Okay? So what is Pareto optimal? So Pareto optimal says, now we say T is Pareto optimal. If, for all the other strategy profiles S, T is weakly Pareto, if P is weakly greater dominated by S, then everything is the same. Okay? So that means I'm T, okay? When do I say T is pretty optimal? Only if somebody else weakly pretty dominate me, then that somebody else must be the same as me. Okay? They should achieve the same effect in every dimension. It could not be the case that some other people is strictly better than me in one dimension. Oh, that's not good. Okay, if somebody Pareto dominates me, oh, then I'm no longer Pareto optimal. Okay, but if somebody weakly Pareto optimal, Pareto dominates me, it's fine. All right. So this is the definition of Pareto optimal. Now we also have a strongly, like that. Okay, it's a weakly Pareto optimal. Okay, so what is weakly Pareto optimal? That means probably there are more strong people, okay? Before I say, if somebody weakly Pareto dominates me, it must be the same as me, right? Then what is weakly Pareto optimal? It says, okay, if somebody, we always say the following, okay? If there is no other profile that can strongly Pareto dominate me, okay? So there could be some people Pareto dominates me. That's fine. Alright? So I have 90 points for every subject. Somebody else has 95 for one project and 90 for other subjects. That's still fine for me, okay? I'm okay that as long as somebody do not strongly Pareto dominate me, then I'm happy, okay? So in that case, I'm called weakly Pareto optimal. Okay? Because there could be somebody who Pareto dominates me in the normal sense. Okay? If somebody could Pareto dominate me in the normal sense, I'm no longer Pareto optimal, but I can still be weakly Pareto optimal. So as long as nobody beats me in every subject, then it's okay. Alright? Okay. Alright, so now we will define the Nash equilibrium. What is Nash equilibrium? So basically, Nash equilibrium is the concept saying that if there is a state of strategy, so everyone chooses one strategy, right? This player chooses strategy 1, this player chooses strategy 2, etc. So with this combination, if nobody is willing to change its strategy to another one. So willing means what? Willing means changing will bring them more benefit, right? So in other words, you fix one player, you say, oh, I give you a second chance. Would you like to change your strategy? And then this player says, no, no, no. My current strategy is best for me, so I will not change. So if this is the case for every player, then it is a Nash equilibrium. All right? Okay? So in that case, strategy Sij is the so-called best response strategy to the other people's profile. Okay? So when other people fix their strategies, the person you are looking at, right, its current choice is the so-called best response. Best response means what? This strategy can generate the largest benefit to this player. Alright? So this player will not change its strategy. Right? Okay? So mathematically, it just says this. Alright? The gain of I on ij is better than or equal to the gain of I under strategy IL, right? Okay. Now, you also have a stronger concept of Nash equilibrium, saying that, oh, actually, this strategy is the best, and at the same time, no other strategy can be the same as this one. So this one is the only best strategy. Because sometimes you can have two or three best strategies, right? All of them give you the same benefit. But this time, it says, okay, if this is unique, right? This best is unique, then it's called a, strong. Again, you have a strong. So, alright, so it's here, right? So if the, so if exactly one such strategy, that is the best response, then this is the strictly best response strategy, right? So now we have a strict here, right? And then if this is strict, so if everyone has a strict strategy being the best response, then the whole profile, we call it strict Nash equilibrium. Alright? basically, strict just means equal signs on, right? You have no equal sign. It's logical. Okay, so now we come to the picture about relationship of different concepts. For example, here we know that a Pareto optimal strategy will imply weakly Pareto optimal. Right? So if the strategy is Pareto optimal, of course it's weak, right, as well. Okay? So this is something that can be guaranteed. And on the other hand, you know that if you have a strictly dominant strategy, then of course it implies you have dominant strategy. Alright? It also implies you have strict Nash equilibrium. If everybody chooses one strategy, so that means a pure strategy case, right? So pure strategy just means everyone only chooses one strategy, right? And then both of them again could imply that you can have a Nash equilibrium in pure strategies. Okay, so these are the relationship between different concepts of Nash equilibrium and also dominant strategy and also Pareto optimal. Okay, but these are only for you to understand that how to define certain strategy profile is good or not, right? So whether people will deviate from these kind of strategies. Okay, so now let's briefly cover the topics we are going to talk about in the game theory part. So in this lecture, we'll talk about the inefficiency of equilibrium. That means how difficult it is to compute an equilibrium, all right? And then the complexity of finding equilibrium. Okay, well, so actually the one I'm talking about is complexity. Inefficiency means the equilibrium, although it's stable, its social efficiency is very bad. Which means compared to the optimal solution, it is very bad. Okay, so this is the two topics we are going to talk about today. Now, of course, other than these, we'll also talk about other types of games in this lecture. And then after that, before this one, we'll talk about the missing component here. So there's a so-called cooperative games, which means people work together to make some effort, right? So this will be the lecture on Monday, which is 2 days away, okay? 2 days later. And then after that, we'll talk about market equilibrium, multi-agent systems. The market equilibrium means we'll talk about the matching and auction setting, all right? So you know matching, you already know the pair of different people. And also auction means you sell things to the users and how users will bid for the item, right? So this is an auction theory. And then we'll talk about multi-agent systems, including the fair division subject and also scheduling subject. And then we'll talk about the so-called mechanism design approach. And we'll use facilitation games as an example to explain them. Okay, so this is one of my research focus as well. And then finally, there is also a broader scope called computational social choice. Okay, so this is an even broader field, basically about you have some candidates and you want to sit among some of them and how to use a reasonable rule to decide who will be the winners. Right? So these are the subjects that will be covered here. Okay. So now we start with this inefficiency of equilibrium. So you know that the Nash equilibrium is actually very good because nobody will deviate from its current choice, right? Everyone thinks, oh, my current decision, my current strategy is very good for me. I'm not willing to change to another one, right? Okay. But Nash equilibrium also has its drawback. So what's the drawback? Now basically, you know, for one game, there could be multiple equilibria, okay? Multiple Nash equilibria. Now, some of them could be very bad. In terms of what? So let's see this definition. There's a definition called POA, price of anarchy. So anarchy means no government. Nobody regulates the behavior of people. Everyone just acts according to their own best interest, right? So this means the anarchy. So in this case, you will arrive at a certain Nash equilibrium, right? No control, no central control, a certain equilibrium. Now this equilibrium could be very bad. Now here, we define the cost of a solution in this way, okay? So we have a so-called optimal solution. So this optimal solution, of course, has the minimum cost, okay? Smallest cost. And then your Nash equilibrium can also have a cost, right? Okay, so what is price of energy? Price of energy says, then among all the Nash equilibrium, is the equilibrium with the largest cost. I take that one, divide by the cost of optimal solution. And let's see how big that value can be. For example, the optimal solution, it could be cost 100. And then your worst natural equilibrium, its cost could be 1 million, right? Okay, so 1 million divided by 100 is 10,000, right? It's a huge number, right? So that means in order for people to arrive at some stable status, all right, without the control from government, then the equilibrium probably could incur a large cost, right, compared to the centralized control. So if you have centralized control, the overall cost is only 100, right? But if it's decentralized, every people go for their best interest, then the cost could be huge, right? So if this ratio is very big, then this game probably is not quite ideal, right? Because, well, if you give the participants enough freedom, then the social efficiency becomes very, very low, right? Or the social cost becomes huge. That's not what we hope for, right? Okay? So this value will characterize how good your game is, right? Now, because which game you use to let people play is the designer's choice, right? You need to design some game where the POA is not too big, right? Okay? Now, another thing. So there's a symmetric concept called price of stability. What is this? Now here, stability, right? So price of stability, now this stable stability just means Nash equilibrium. Alright? So price of stability means if you want the society to achieve stable status, how much do you need to sacrifice at least? Remember, there's a word, at least. Because just now, this is how much you sacrifice at most, right? And then this one says, in order to achieve stability, how much do you need to sacrifice at least? So that means now you are looking at a so-called best Nash equilibrium, right? Because you have multiple equilibrium, right? Among them, there is a best one. This best one should have a very small cost, but not as small as optimal, okay? It is still larger than optimal, but it could be closer to optimal. So here, POS is the minimum value of the cost of certain Nash equilibrium divided by the cost of optimal solution. So it's the best Nash divided by optimal solution. Okay? This one is called price of stability. Alright? Okay. Alright, so now we'll cover some very complex topic. Okay. So after we talk about Nash equilibrium, now we define the so-called zero-sum games. What is zero-sum game? The zero-sum game says the following. It says that, for example, we have two players. One player, if it gets $10, then the other player will lose $10. All right. So their game add up to be what? Zero. Right? They're always zero. No matter which strategy combination, it's always zero. Now, for zero-sum games, people prove that the Nash equilibrium, the computation of Nash equilibrium, can be transformed into a min-max strategy problem. And this one can be modeled as a linear program. And we know linear program can be solved in polynomial time. Okay? So for zero-sum game, this is easy. Okay? The computation of the equilibrium is easy. Now, how about general form game? General form game means general normal form game. It means it's not zero-sum, right? It could be the case that I gain $10, you lose only $5. Alright? That's okay. Now for this kind of games, people show that it is PPAD complete. Okay? Well, this is a very interesting term. What is PPAD complete? Well, firstly, let me tell you the name of the problem. So the name is called polynomial parity argument for directed graphs. Okay, so there are five keywords, and then they put the 2P and A and 1D into this abbreviation, right? Okay. designed by a scientist called Papad Dimitrov. Okay, and people usually say that, oh, because Papad Dimitrov, the name had many P and A and a D, so that's why he made the name PPAD, okay, to somehow represent his name. But anyway, it's just a story. But this problem is also called end of the line problem. So what is end of the line? Now, here I tell you what it means. Now suppose you have a huge graph, okay? In this huge graph, every node in the graph, it only has at most one edge coming in. And also at most one edge going out. Alright? It's a very simple graph, right? Only one edge coming in and one edge going out at most. Now you may say, then this graph is very special, right? What can this graph be? Can the graph be a tree? A circle, okay. Yeah. Cycle, or we say cycle, right? So, because it's one in, one out, right? One in, one out, right? It goes back to the original point, then becomes a cycle, right? Or it can be what? A line or a path, right? So you start here and go on, okay? Never come back. Okay, that's also okay. I stop here. That's also okay. So basically, this graph is just a collection of cycles and paths. Right? Okay. Now, what's the goal here? The goal here says, if I tell you one starting point, which means one source. Okay, I tell you one node who only has outgoing neighbor. Okay, no incoming. I tell you its origin, a source. And then the question asks you for another source or a sink. Sink means what? You stop here, you never go out, right? This is sink. So the question is just, I give you the information of one source. Please tell me the information of a sink or the information of another source, which means the starting point of another path, right? That's the goal of the problem. And then you can say, oh, it's very easy, right? Why? Because you already tell me a source, right? I just go on, and then I go to the end. I never move on again, and that's the thing you're looking for, right? This seems very easy, but the tricky thing here is the number of nodes in the graph is not polynomial. It is exponential. Okay? And then can you find it? But basically, you cannot query like this, right? You cannot ask everyone, what's your next node? Okay, what's your next node? You cannot ask a question like this, because if you ask a question like this, you will spend exponential time. That's too slow. Alright? Okay. So that's why this problem, right? It is not polynomial. And they define that the difficulty of the problem to be PPAD complete, which means this is the most difficult problem in the class PPAD. Okay? And then this one, okay? This problem, if you can solve it, you can solve every problem in this class, in the class of PPAD. Now, of course, PPAD complete and NP complete, they are two different things. Alright? They are not equivalent. They also do not have some clear implication, because PPAD complete, this one is defined on another scope, on the game theory part. Alright? Okay, so so now you know here, the thing you can do is just a query to Oracle, right? So you for every node, you can ask what's its next node and what is your previous node. So these are the questions you can ask. Alright. So this is the so-called end of the line problem. Now, today I'm not going to show, for example, what kind of problems are PPAD complete, what kind of games it can describe. So today I'm going to show the relationship between this one and the so-called Sperner lemma. Okay, so this one is actually more interesting. Okay, so this will be used to prove the hardness of computing Nash's equivalent, or the hardness of the end of the line problem. Okay, now I'm not going to link this problem to computing interpretation of Nash's problem, but I'm going to link this problem with end of the line problem. So what's this problem? So this problem is following. It says, I have a triangle, okay? This triangle, I will divide it into many small triangles in this one, okay? It's kind of three directions of lines to divide a big triangle into smaller triangles, right? Okay, so now let's play a game. So what's the game? The game, the game I'm talking about is different from game theory in this game, okay? So let's label all the vertices of the triangles in the following way. I label this node as 0, label this node as 1, and label this node as 2, okay? So three big vertices, 0, 1, 2, okay? And then along the edge, 0, 1, I label the middle vertices as either 0 or 1, okay? As either 0 or 1. And then along the edge, 0 and 2, I label them either as 0 or 2. And then on the edge, 1, 2, I label them as either 1 or 2. So basically, along which edge, you can only label the nodes in the middle by the two endpoints, the two labels in the endpoints. So up to now, any question? Is it okay? Alright. And then inside the triangle, for example, this one, right? These vertices, just label as you wish. You can label anything, 0, 1, 2, as you wish. Alright? Okay. So now in this problem, we are trying to show something. So the Sponner's lemma says, if you play the game like this, you can always find a triangle, small triangle, whose three vertices are 0, 1, 2, respectively. No matter how you label it, as long as you follow my rule along the edge, alright? No matter how you label inside, you can always find a triangle whose three vertices are 0, 1, 2. That seems an interesting problem, but very hard to prove if you do not know the tools, right? Okay. But of course, when you see my picture here, you can already have some guess, right? Because I'm drawing some edges here, right? Now, can you guess according to what rule I'm drawing these edges? Yeah, very good. 0, 1 edge. Right? So basically, when your triangle is 0, 1, right? I draw an edge. Right? You are 0, 1, I draw an edge. Okay? So I draw those edges whenever I see a 0, 1 segment, right? But you still need to decide the direction of the edge, right? But what's the direction of the edge? So that 0, 1 is one bonus, okay. Second one, what's the direction of edge? Yeah. Greedy? What kind of greedy? But I draw edge for every 0, 1, right? For every 0, 1, I have an edge. For every 0, 1, I have an edge. So I will not miss any of them. Oh, very good. On the left of the arrow, so if you go up like this, then 0 is on the left, 1 is on the right. Okay, so that's the way to decide, right? Okay, for example, why go down? Because if you go down, 0 is on the left, right? 1 is on the right. Okay, so anyway, when you face the direction of the arrow, 0 is on the left, 1 is on the right. Okay? So when you draw these arrows, then you see actually these edges. Now, of course, the thing below is a bit complicated. Let's ignore them for now, okay? Well, let's just focus on these edges, okay, in a minute. So for these edges, there's one very interesting phenomenon, okay? What's the phenomenon? These edges, is it possible that one node has two outgoing neighbors? Is it possible? So I'm one node here. So here, node is triangle, okay? Node is triangle. So is it possible that this one come down and also over there? It's not possible, right? Because you go down, that means this is zero, right? And then how can you go that way? Because you need to guarantee zeros on your left, right? You can never go. So that means every node only has one outgoing neighbor, right? And a similar reason, everyone only has one incoming neighbor. You can only come in from one direction. You cannot come in also from here. That's not possible. Oh, then what does it remind you? You can only go out one and come in one. So that's exactly which problem? End of the line problem, isn't it? Only one outgoing, one incoming, right? Okay, let's continue. Now, because now the setup becomes very similar, now let's see. What's the nature of a triangle whose three vertices are 0, 1, 2? If a triangle three vertices are 0, 1, 2, what's special about it? Yeah. I heard it. So basically, for these, they are the blue triangles here, right? The blue triangles, the important feature is they are either source or sink, right? Because for 0, 1, 2 triangle, there's only one edge, 0, 1, right? So either somebody come in, stop, right? Or it go out, stop. Oh, sorry, not go out, stop. It go out, no coming in. So basically, these blue triangles are exactly the end point, right? The end of the path or the beginning of a path, right? Okay. Now, so it's exactly, so finding a blue triangle, right? Finding a blue triangle here is exactly finding what? Finding the one end point, right? Either the sink or the source. So now, basically, finding such a triangle, in some cases, in the reduction to Nash equilibrium, it corresponds to finding a Nash equilibrium. Alright? In the general normal form case. Okay. Now, let's see. There's still one thing which is not very clear. How can you see, how can you guarantee in this figure it's not all cycles? If it's all cycles, you cannot find blue triangles, right? If everything is cycle, right? If every component is cycle, then you cannot find blue triangle. That means this lemma is wrong, right? Because this lemma says, if you label like this, there is always a blue triangle in the system. Right? So that means you need to persuade people that you can first find one node which is a sink. Oh, sorry, source, right? If you are able to find one source, that means what? You at least have one sink. If you have one sink, then that one is blue triangle, right? Okay, so now the remaining task is to find a source. So that's why I draw so many interesting curves here. So this is why I draw these. Because originally you only have this triangle, nothing below, right? So now I draw extra edge. I connect this zero with this one. The zero with this zero. Okay, I connect this zero with everything here. Alright? And then I also draw the link according to the same principle. Guarantee zero is on the left, right? If I draw this, zero is on the left. If I draw this, zero on the left, right? And then this one is also zero on the left. Right? Okay. So now I complete the whole picture. Now after I do this, then I'm very safe with saying, I find the source. This is the source. Right? Because this is 0, 1, right? Go in, right? Okay, can somebody else go this place? No, I didn't find any 0, 1 edge, right? Because the outside area, right, there's nothing that can connect to this point. If you want to connect to this point, you have to use another 0-1 edge, but there's no other 0-1 edge which can guarantee that, well, at least this side there's no 0-1 edge. This side there's no 0-1 edge, right? Only this side has 0-1 edge. So when you go in, right, this point will be your source. It's a very safe source. Okay? So now since you have a source, then you know, if I follow the path, right, like this, I can always find one sink, for sure. Right? Okay, so that finishes the proof. Any question? Okay. Also, actually, this is very beautiful. Although I didn't tell you the whole story about the connection between computing and Nash equilibrium, so if you are interested, you may go to related literature to find out more details. So the proof of Sperling-Smithers lemma, it is quite interesting trick. And then actually this is only a 2D version of Sperling's lemma, because Sperling's lemma is more general. It's applicable to higher dimension. Okay? But in order to explain the concept more easily, I use a 2D version of Sperling's lemma. Alright. Okay. Yeah. Alright, so I think that we'll take 10 minutes break before we come into different types of games.